And welcome to episode 30 of Black Girl Squee, take two. I am Dee Dee, also known as Death's Daughter.
And I'm Enda, also known as Enda's Corner.
And again, this is Black Girl Squee, where we celebrate Black Girl magic with a squee! Woo! You can contact us at Black Girl Squee on Twitter. Again, Enda's Corner for Enda, Death's Daughter for me. On Tumblr, we're blackgirlsquee.tumblr.com. On email, blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. You can also rate and review us on iTunes. And listen to the show online at blackgirlsquee.simplecast.fm. Our spoiler policy is that we spoil shit. So if we mention a show, we might spoil some shit about it.
Yeah.
So we usually spoil How to Get Away with Murder, but the show kind of spoiled itself. And this time we might spoil Queen Sugar. So, and maybe Luke Cage, I don't know. So that's your spoiler warning. We also cuss a lot and we talk about peen. And we squee really loud, Enda more than me, but, so that's a warning. You might want to turn your volume down a little bit when we get ready to squee. So, you can practice while we give you the squee-worthy news. The first item is a long-form article in Vulture, written by Maria Elena Fernandez. She talks to Queen Sugar's all-women directing crew. At the beginning of the article, a stat is reported from the Directors Guild of America that tracked the past 7 TV seasons and showed that only 144 out of 619 first-time episodic directors were women. And just last season, women directed only 17% of the 4,000-plus episodes of television. And out of that 17%, only 3% were women of color. So, Ava DuVernay became the first series creator and showrunner to hire 7 women of various backgrounds, and 5 of them had never directed episodic television before. They were basically directors that she'd met through various film festivals across the country, across the world. And, you know, they were trying to break into directing television. And even with film credits under their belt, they still couldn't get in the door. From the article, Ava DuVernay says, quote, it would be different if they were working at the local library and I gave them an episode of television. These women have directed films, acclaimed films that have gone to festivals around the world. Independent films and TV are very similar in that you don't have a lot of time, but in TV you have more money. So how would you not be able to translate making something beautiful under time and money constraints when you're given the blessing of more money, more tools, more crew, under the same time pressure you already demonstrated that you can excel in? End quote. Makes sense to me, but yep. You know Hollywood.
Yep.
So after working on Queen Sugar, the first season directors got jobs at TV's most high-profile shows, including Transparent, American Crime, Grey's Anatomy and Netflix's upcoming Dear White People. You also have to remember that Shonda Rhimes gave Ava a TV directing opportunity when she let Ava direct an episode of Scandal. So,
yeah, I remember that.
She's following that same example. So what made this such a great article and what made it a long read is that the author Maria Elena Fernandez talked to each one of the directors of the first season of Queen Sugar, and she got some great quotes from all of them. One of them was Soyoung Kim, who said that Ava really wants to keep that breathing space and quiet, contemplative moments. And I think that's why it stands out as a beautiful show. I agree with that. And definitely some of the moments that that I remember most about this show, I just don't think I've seen on any other show. Mm. And that, you know, that we get at least two minutes focused on Nova praying over, praying to Oshun for Charlie's to rejuvenate her sensuality and all that kind of stuff. That was just a magical moment that probably wouldn't have been given the space to exist on other shows. Victoria Mahoney said, there are tons of people with immense power who could have done what she did, who could have said, for one season straight, I'm going to hire a bunch of outliers who made badass, critically acclaimed films, and I'm going to give them a chance because no one else will. We show up for work, and we're working on farms in areas where our ancestors weren't allowed to speak or move or breathe. Mm. Here we are standing as women of color directors with a woman of color show creator and a woman of color who wrote the book and a woman of color who owns a network and then a family of color as the protagonists. This is as special gets. And I don't know why she used woman of color instead of black.
Yeah.
Since everybody that she mentioned is black, but hey.
Exactly.
and she herself is black. But anyway. But go ahead. I guess just trying to be inclusive, I suppose. Tanya Hamilton directed Night Catches Us. She moved to Los Angeles from Philadelphia 2.5 years ago to work in television, but was still having trouble finding her start. She said, I had been knocking on doors and the doors were not opening, even though I had a film. It made no difference. Queen Sugar has helped me get so much work, but I have to recognize that it was this beautiful anomaly.
Mm. I still have to see that film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The sole white woman director on this show, on this season, Kat Candler, interestingly said, when I read about Jessica Jones, I thought, that's all Ava. And that's what I thought too.
Yeah.
While I rolled my eyes.
Yep.
Like, because, you know, they gonna act like this is revolutionary.
Yep.
When somebody just did it.
Exactly. Like they didn't know. Like, oh, y'all stay trying to. Never mind. But thank you, Kat. I'm glad you said it.
I'm glad you said it.
Because so, if we say it, we sound better.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, about Sally Richardson Whitfield, she directed two episodes of Eureka, but nobody would let her direct off of that because they assumed that she's a vanity actress who really didn't direct. But Ava said that she knew that that Sally could do it. She says, "I knew her mind. Of all the directors, she was the only one who had not directed a feature, but I knew she could, and she came through with flying colors. Gorgeous episodes, finished early and under budget." And I believe she directed the scene that I just mentioned with Nova and Charlie. And I love that scene. I loved everything about it. DuVernay also hired Tina Mabry, after being wowed by her movie, what's it called, Mississippi Damned?
Yes.
Awesome. Hired Mabry as a staff writer, promoted her to producer, and also let her direct the season's last two episodes. Mabry says, "Queen Sugar is allowing people to see themselves on television in a new way, especially people of color and Southerners too. Once you see those representations of our life or your community, it empowers you because you feel like you have a voice now. We've been waiting for the floodgates to open, and they're open now." So that's just a little taste out of what you can find out in that article. It's a really good read. And if you love the show as much as we do, yes, you'll really enjoy the article. So should we talk about the season finale now?
We should just say that for main topic, though.
Okay.
We can say that for main topic because, you know, that's one of the things that got us through.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. So, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So, to Maria Elena Fernandez, to Ava DuVernay, and all of the directors of Queen Sugar, we give a big squeeze!
Okay. Our next item in Squeeworthy News. If you read the site, The Learned Fangirl, you will see that they just did this past week an article, "Pop Culture Comfort Food for Difficult Times." And as a point of disclosure, I was one of the contributors for this because the editors and some contributors decided that people are in need of comfort food. And so we talked about some of our pop culture things that we love and just get us through tough times. And these were television, movies, music, books, video games, and a whole lot more. For some of these are things that we've held on to for a very long time. And also there are also some newer discoveries for us as well. There are things that are for kids and adults. And so this is for if you need comfort now, if you need to save it for a later time. These were a few of the suggestions. Well, some of these were the suggestions. Hayao Miyazaki movies, Creed, Animal Crossing, Steven Universe, the original Star Wars trilogy, Harry Potter, and I'm still loving over-the-top and bad teen Asian dramas.
Not the good ones.
Yeah.
Just the ridiculous ones.
Mass Effect trilogy, Instagram Therapy, Hard Times, which is actually a hardcore punk site, which is like The Onion, and it's funny as hell. That 70s Show, A Different World, Issa Rae's Insecure, Over the Rhine, Disney and Broadway musicals, binge watching favorites, and my contribution was curated music playlists. And so if you are in need of anything that can just like, okay, what can I do to take my mind off of what has been just a complete shit show of a month, a year of a life? These are our suggestions, and I highly recommend it, not just because I'm on it.
Yeah. I mean, just go to mixcloud.com/Indolore and listen to the Black Swan Collective. That is great comfort food. If you enjoy curated playlists, and I'm not saying that just because I'm a fan or because my co-host created the show. But it's definitely, if you want to curl up with some good music, that's a great place to go. So thank you and Inda and the rest of the learned fangirls for offering pop culture comfort food. And to all of you, we give a squeeze. You okay?
Yeah. I might have got lightheaded on that though.
You knew squeaked kind of hard there.
Yeah.
Michelle Indigocello has created an off-Broadway show based on the works of James Baldwin called Can I Get a Witness? The Gospel of James Baldwin. And it hits the Harlem Stage Gatehouse this December. Can I Get a Witness is an African American church service that features original music by Indigocello with direction by Charlotte Braithwaite. It is inspired by James Baldwin's The Fire Next Time and the following Baldwin quote: "From my point of view, no label, no slogan, no party, no skin color, and indeed no religion is more important than the human being." So to Michelle and Indigocello and Can I Get a Witness? We give a big squeeze.
Okay. And just this past week, we learned that Dorothy Hyde will become the 15th Black woman to be honored with a U.S. postage stamp. And she is a PhD. She was the 10th national president of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, and she was appointed by President Carter to the Presidential Commission on a National Agenda for the 1980s. She also served as the president for the National Council of Negro Women for more than 40 years. This is the 40th stamp in the Black Heritage series to honor women's right to honor the women's right icon, and it's supposed to be scheduled to come out in 2017. And as the post office said, although she rarely gained the recognition granted her male contemporaries, she became one of the most influential civil rights leaders of the 20th century. And the stamp features the artist Thomas Blackshear, the second, and it's based on a 2009 photograph that's shot by Latif Mangum, and the art director Dere Noyes designed the stamp. I hope I said their names correctly. So
to Dorothy Height and all the people involved with putting black women on stamps, we give a big squeeze. A trailer for a sci-fi film set in post-apocalyptic London has been released. The movie is called Afro Punk Girl, and it was written by Anetta Laufer and produced by Shobu Kapoor and Anya Rzhenkova. Afro Punk Girl is an upcoming short film that imagines a post-apocalyptic London that everyone is trying to flee from. Actress Danielle Vitalis plays the main character, Lil. And I'm just excited because with all of the dystopian movies that have come out, you never see a black woman in the lead. So I'm excited to see this. And maybe a short film will turn into a longer film. If somebody with imagination gives it a chance.
Yep.
So, to everybody involved with Afro Punk Girl, we give a squeeze.
Okay, and other short films. The Fader magazine has produced a documentary on the rapper Princess Nokia, or Nokia. I'm not sure where the emphasis of that goes. It is a 17-minute film directed by Orion Barkey, and it's set in the Lower East Side in East Harlem, where Nokia is from. Like I said, there's footage of intimate recording sessions, shots of some of her most beloved local spots, and vulnerable stoop conversations that all show the city's important connection to her work. And this is comes about a couple of months after the release of her album, 1992, which is actually pretty good. You know, I listened to the whole thing, finally, and yeah, she's definitely talented, and so really want to show her some support and watch this doc about her life, and because we really just don't have a whole lot of black female rappers who are really well known and, you know, making it to the mainstream these days. And I just really need to see more black women have a bigger presence in rap, and so hopefully this will go towards that.
So to Princess Nokia and her new documentary, we give a squee. My squee is broken. What happened?
Squeed out from yesterday that didn't record.
True. Our last item in squee-worthy news is that a Miriam Makeba biopic is in development. In 2011, there was a documentary called Mama Africa about Miriam Makeba that used her popular nickname. Now a fictionalized feature film account of Makeba's life is in the works, coming from Suzanne DePass and longtime business partner Madison Jones of DePass Jones Entertainment. They're in partnership with the Miriam Makeba Estate, the Miriam Makeba Foundation, and Mama Africa Cultural and Social Trust. So there's not much more information so far about the biopic. I don't think anyone has been cast yet. But I'm sure that Shadow and Act will continue to keep us apprised of anything that happens with this movie. So to Miriam Makeba, to Suzanne DePass, and this future biopic, we give a squee!
Yay!
Woo! All right, so Enda teased you with our main topic, which is about the art that got us through this hellscape of a year, especially the art created by black women, because that's the show. So we're going to focus on a bunch of different areas, and if we left anyone or anything out, please hit us up at Black Girl Squee on Twitter, blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. Let us know via review on iTunes. You know the drill. So we're going to start with TV, and Endo, why don't you start? I think you contributed a lot to this list.
Okay, well, TV, where we started, for Black Women in Art Who Saved Us, the women of Luke Cage. We had Simone Missick as Misty Knight, Avery Woodard as Maria Dillard, had Rosario Dawson as Claire Temple, we had a bunch of other black women who showed up. There were Sonia Sohn, who played a police officer.
Oh, my God. Oh, sorry.
I know. I'm like, we forgot her yesterday, didn't we?
How could I forget her?
I don't know, because we all recognized her immediately when we saw it and got excited when we saw her. And
I got excited a lot anyway.
yes. Let's see. There were so many Black women in the supporting cast. I mean, there was the what was she, the captain or lieutenant? What was her name? Her name was Priscilla, but I forget her real name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was the one that replaced Sonya Sohn. Oh, that Sonya had to leave.
Yeah, had
baby
her,
girl.
Had another woman in the community. She was a witness for the.
The lady that played Vanessa.
Oh yeah, Vanessa. Shoot, that was Patricia. I loved Patricia. Yeah. It brought back, I didn't see Jessica Jones, they brought back the lady who played Luke Cage's wife, Reva?
Reva.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, brought her back. I mean, just so many Black women in this really ultra-Black show. You know?
Super just, Black.
Yes, this was like the Blackest thing we've seen ever on television or Netflix, if we count that as television. And it was just such a breath of fresh air, you know, to get these varied and nuanced portrayals of Black women. And although I have to give a lot of love to all of them, I really just have to target Simone Missick here. So I was listening to the Lemonade podcast, and they are pretty hardcore comic book fans there. And so for them to look at Misty Knight here, because they said in the comics, she's pretty two-dimensional and not well fleshed out, but Simone Missick brought her to life and just made her fully realized. And so she was the breakout star of this whole show. And so we just have to, you know, give her a special shout out, because she's the Misty Knight that fans of, you know, who have been longtime fans have been waiting for. And so for her to do so well, you know, bless it. Bless.
Yes. Deborah Iorende played Candace. Why was I thinking Vanessa? Candace was the so-called eyewitness.
Yeah.
Okay. Karen Pittman played Inspector Priscilla Ridley.
Priscilla Ridley.
Yeah, I'm up on IMDb now.
Yeah, because we're too lazy to Google and stuff.
But isn't this, I mean, this is the first time I've ever been like, oh my God, there's so many Black women, I don't remember all of their names.
And they're talking to each other. They have scenes together.
Yep. Queen Sugar's Dawn Leanne Gardner was in 4 episodes. Because I was like, wait a minute, is that Charlie? That is Charlie! And I was like, okay, peak Blackness has been achieved. You got Queen Sugar on Luke Cage. I mean, it don't get no blacker.
Wow.
Sonya Sohn played Captain Betty Audrey. Every time she talked, I'm just saying, people got moist.
And people was my entire timeline who live tweeted it.
Okay, yes. I was just thinking about me, but I don't really know about anybody else, but okay. Sonya Sohn, gone too soon from the show. Cassandra Freeman played fine ass Patricia Wilson, who was thirsty as fuck for some Luke Cage.
Yep.
Never got that coffee, unfortunately.
Right.
Everybody else got coffee with her. Parisa Fitzhenley played Reva. Who's Luke Cage's wife. Ninja DeVoe, another Queen Sugar actress.
Wow.
She's the one that played Aisha.
Wait, is that the one who Ralph Angel was messing around with? The boy,
yes,
from the diner? Oh.
Yes.
See, now I know why she looked familiar.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's more There's so many black women in the cast.
Yes.
Okay, it's just it's so beautiful.
It's so essential to making the plot go forward. So essential in
yes.
that.
And it helps that there were black women in the writer's room.
Yeah.
And the actors were so good that they improvised even more blackness into the show. One of the most memorable lines from Misty Knight was a line that Simone Missick just improvised when she told Inspector Ridley that she just let Mariah Skeevy on out of here. just peak blackness and all around. And when you consider that Simone Missick is a graduate of Howard University, HU, it just made it even more rich and more black. And it was just this show just made me so happy, so very happy.
Yeah.
And then on top of all of that black woman goodness, you had fine ass Mike Coulter. You got to look at him for 13 episodes.
We got to look at Mahershala Ali for about 6.
Bless.
Lord have mercy.
Jesus. Anyway.
Beautiful man in that voice.
Ooh, you talk about moist. except when he busts out the rocket launcher. Then I was like,
the rocket launcher in the middle of Harlem.
I was so ridiculous.
Ain't nobody saying shit. He got a rocket launcher. Right. I almost cried when I saw it. I'm glad everybody noticed just how ridiculous that was, though. I'm like, okay.
I mean, that came out of nowhere. That was straight out of the book for real. Oh, gosh. But, yes. But, the women of Luke Cage definitely got us through 2016.
Yes.
And we talked about her before. We're going to talk about her again. But Ava DuVernay gave us Queen Sugar.
Yes.
And we never want to let it go. The season finale was just this week. And I need season 2 immediately. So let's talk about it. As always, as with every episode, a lot of shit went down.
Yes.
It's a lot of drama in this show. Just 'cause you may think it's some backwoods southern drama, but yeah, a lot of shit goes down in every episode.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to. First of all, Nova is back with her white boo, her white cop boo, and I'm not happy about it because I miss Chantel. But the cop managed to pull a favor and get two sweets. Case was it dropped or some? Anyways. They're not gonna take this case to court. I guess they dropped charges or whatever. So Too Sweet is free and he gets to, you know, go where he wants and, you know, try to start his life over.
Yeah.
So I guess Nova feels some kind of way about Calvin the white cop doing that for her. And they get back together for a while. Because he also says that, you know, he left his wife or whatever. The show doesn't give us any receipts on that. We don't see, like, him living in a new apartment or anything like that. We just have to believe it. Believe it because he says it. And I don't trust him. So, that's Nova. Charlie was scheming all up and through this episode.
Yeah.
She was scheming on everybody and wasn't trying to hear anything from anybody. I'm like, some of the stuff that she was doing didn't have to be done, but that was the way she wanted to do it, so that was what was going to happen. Like, she's lying to Davis about Micah to get him to play in New Orleans because she's got a deal with the owner of the New Orleans basketball team to help her buy the mill. I'm like, this is some convoluted shit.
But she needs to get the financing, though. I mean, that's the thing. When you're in business, one thing that people in business, though, they know not to spend their own money. She's getting other people's money.
Okay. Well, she can't spend her own money because of her divorce. They've like frozen, pretty much said that she shouldn't touch any of the money in her accounts until after the divorce is final.
And she's not. She got somebody else's money.
But I'm like, but rather than, you know, Ralph Angel's suggestion seemed simpler and wouldn't have to go through all of this lying and, you know, shenanigans and stuff.
I think the goal for her, though, is ownership. Ralph Angel's plan wouldn't have given them ownership. She's trying to get back at these white people who fucked over her family.
And, yeah, I mean, if they weren't already just embarking on, you know, the first season of harvesting a crop of this farm, you know, I'd be like, hey, great, take on this other stuff, you know, try to be independent. But doing all this at once, I don't know. It's a lot. It's a risk. She also got money from Felix, his name is, I think, the point guard that Davis wants to play with in New York, which I don't know. I guess I don't know if anybody on Queen Sugar actually follows basketball, but if Davis really wanted a ring, he would go anywhere but New York. And it's funny because you know who's playing in New York now?
Ew.
Derrick Rose.
Ew. And you know what? That's exactly what I was thinking about when they were talking about New York and basketball. I'm like, oh my God, do y'all know who's playing for New York now?
And hey, maybe they do. Maybe Felix is actually like a stand-in for D. Rose. Who knows?
Could be.
That would be. They play the same position. Both light-skinned. So.
But Charlie got his ass though.
Yeah, she did. This is a really convoluted route to get there, but hey, she got him. She did the research on him, mm-hmm. found out that this dude had priors. I don't know if all of them were sex workers or if they were just women that he's assaulted on, you know, on the road.
I think they all were sex workers because they all had their stage names and stuff. Because she was naming their stage names too. So it seems like he targeted.
Ew.
Yeah, that's the thing. He kind of felt like he targeted sex workers.
Ew.
Yeah.
How could that woman be married to him? Anyway. That's a whole other conversation. But, yeah, She follows Felix up into the strip club. She's like, really, your wife was wrong. I'm trying to call my bluff. I've done the research. I know about your priors. If you don't want it all to come to light in the morning, then you agree to play in New Orleans, or you say you're not going to play in New York as long as Davis is there, signs there. And you're also going to wire $5 million to my account, which she then donates a portion of to the sex workers outreach project. And she's doing a lot. Charlie is on her queenpin a game. The only really icky moment is when she was trying to pull one over on Davis and leaves Remy to go to Davis's house. And Davis is trying to kiss up on her and stuff like that. And she is
she cringes. She can't go through it.
Yeah. Yes. And it felt really marital rapey to me. And it was just a gross moment. And it was like, you know, another way that this show manages to depict rape culture in a whole bunch of ways that, yes, even married women get raped by their husbands. Even sex workers can be raped. Mm-hmm. These are all conversations that you shouldn't have to have in 2016, but unfortunately, we still need to be having, because some people, and by some people I mean most men, don't really know what consent is.
Sugar just did so much right as far as, you know, just making, you know, these people, like I said, nuanced, you know, human, you know, complex. I mean, it's kind of, you know, you have this type of drama because this is like the only way drama works is because it's when it's miscommunication or no communication, which is how everything always, you know, goes down. That's just, you know, the way it is. But, you know, just these things, like you were pointing out earlier, the moment with Nova and Charlie, you know, Nova praying over Charlie to Oshun and things like that. These are things we don't get with other shows. We do not get this.
I mean, and this is why I need season two.
Yeah.
Because Ralph found out that Ernest Bordelon willed the farm entirely to him, which means he's going to be butting heads with Charlie pretty soon, because Charlie is not trying to hear anything that comes out of Ralph Angel's mouth when it comes to this farm. Because she still sees Ralph Angel as an immature brother that was dumb enough to get himself locked up. We still don't know why he got locked up. But, you know, she still sees him as that. And, you know, seeing as he just got out, maybe 6 months ago? I don't know. He's not far removed. And the fact that, he just had stolen cell phones in the shed.
He robbed a store.
4 weeks ago?
Robbed a store as soon as he got out.
I mean, yeah, he's done a lot of dumb shit this season.
Yeah.
So I can see why Charlie would not, you know, trust him as much as she probably should. But she's not the only person that owns the farm. She's not the she and if you take Ernest's letter into account, she doesn't own the farm at
Yeah,
all.
exactly. But
But she's standing in front of the mill, writing Queen Sugar in the
this,
sand. She's made herself boss of this shit, and she don't even really own
Well,
it.
she owns the mill. The mill is definitely hers. The farm isn't. So that's kind of where I'm wondering how that's going to play out if, the farm is Ralph Angel's and the mill is hers. That's kind of where I'm wondering how this is going to work, or if it's going to work at all. Because, I mean, man.
Yeah, and I really don't want it. I really don't want to see the Bordelon siblings fighting each other. I'd rather see them fighting the Boudreaux and the Landrys or whatever they are. Those folks. Because it's. I just feel like it's going to end up being Ralph Angel against Nova and Charlie, and I don't know. I mean. I just don't see how Ralph is going to win that or come out looking very good because he's just going to start pouting and whining like he has been half this season. And,
But wow. Yeah. Definitely
I
getting the feeling
just
that the show is
am.
better than the
But, and, Nova goes to a club with or a bar with Calvin Whitecop, and a friend of his grabs her butt and spits on her when she introduces herself, and he recognizes her as the journalist that that wrote an expose on the police system in New Orleans. I knew the shit wasn't going any well with this white cop, and I was hoping they wouldn't get back together, but now we see how exactly how ugly it can get.
Will say at least Calvin did try and whoop old boy's ass for assaulting her like that, but man, Nova was shook up.
If she had stayed with Chantal, it never would have happened. Anyway, whatever. I don't want to say I told you so, but bitch, I told you so. Sorry, Nova.
This show is wow. I mean, quite frankly, its existence is really kind of mind-blowing to me. I mean, it's on a network owned by a black woman, and she renewed the show before the first season even aired. And we talked about Michelle Ndegeocello earlier. She does the music for the show, and I think most of the crew are also women of color, because I know a black woman is a cinematographer for the show, and it is beautifully shot. And so just all of that coming together for this has just made this show just a phenomenon, just something else. It's like, wow.
And come on, season two. Come on, season two, please. I need it. But yes, so Queen Sugar definitely got us through this year. And I need Queen Sugar to come back with the quickness in 2017. And another show by a black woman creator is Insecure by Issa Rae, also of Awkward Black Girl. Solange does the is the musical coordinator on Insecure, so she has introduced a lot of little known bands and artists on the show. And this is a comedy on HBO that's set in LA. Definitely after this, you know, crabby year, we need more comedy. Yeah. And to have a comedy centered around Black women and their friendships is a great thing to see. So, that is, those are some of the creations in TV that got us through this year. So, now we're going to move to music, and I'm going to hand it over to Inda, because she is the host of Black Swan Collective, and she knows her music. So, okay. Inda, tell us about Black women's music that got us
so
through 2016.
So much music from Black women this year, and it has just been amazing. There's one thing good out of this year. It has been the music. And so we had King finally drop their full album. Because it was like 3 or 4 years before when they did the EP. And now they finally got to drop the album. It's We Are King. Great album. Corrine Bailey Rae. The Heart Speaks in Whispers is an awesome album. If you know me, then you know I love Oceans of Slumber, Winter, because Cami Gilbert's voice does something to me. Okay. It really does. Her voice is beautiful. Lizzo's EP, Coconut Oil. Oh, I love it. It's so good. And it's fun. It's, you know, and all of that. Let's see, who else? Denisha Insane. Wow, I finally went ahead and listened to that too. Oh, it's so awesome, so awesome, so awesome. Esperanza Spalding had an album this year. It was really, really good.
Oh, that's right.
Some women that we've talked about on the show here, Jamila Woods. That's a really, really good album too. Macy Gray did this really good acoustic album, Stripped. You should check that out, definitely. Let's see, who else? There's Santa Gold's 99 Cents. That's an awesome one, too. A couple that I actually forgot before that. Oh, wait, I almost forgot The Suffers. Because Cam Franklin, who's the lead singer, that kind of puts me in the mind of Sharon Jones and have to give them shout out to her. A couple that I forgot because they're really indie. Yaya Bey, who I forget the name of her album, like off the top of my head, but one of those experimental, kind of out there people I love. And Adia Victoria, you should give that a listen to. So I think there's some that you wanted. Oh, Laura Mavula. Yeah, that was The Dreaming Room, is it called? That's a really good album. And I have to give a shout out to some Black trans women who a couple did albums, but one just did a single that I really love. That's Quay Dash. She has an EP out. And who was the other? It was Quay Dash and Amerisu. She might also go by Star Amerisu, but her EP is really good and dreamlike as well. And one of my favorite songs that came out this year is Shea Diamond's I Am Her. And I featured that on the show, too. So, yeah, Black women did the damn thing this year.
And what did you want to say about Sheila E.?
Sheila E., bless her. She gave us the Prince tribute we all deserved. And after that heifer called her and everybody else irrelevant and doing a Prince tribute, trying to talk up Madonna of all people. Oh. Sheila said, nah, bitch, we relevant. She ain't say it in those words, she said it in her performance. At least that's what I got out of it. And oh, Sheila, I mean, BET did the tribute right. I mean, they put the right people on, and then they did right by letting Sheila E. close it. And oh my gosh, y'all, that image of her, that expression on her face, and Mattai's arm around her waist, I mean, come on. That was everything. Yeah, oh, I know. Man. Don't make me cry, but yo. See, this is, if y'all know me, y'all know I love Sheila E. Because I used to want to be her when I was a child. Hell, I still want to be her because she's Sheila E. And so for her to be the one to finally do, to give the tribute to Prince, that, you know, the definitive one, that means everything. So I ever hear somebody call Sheila E. irrelevant again, I'm going to go beat them.
Anyway, we're not doing Kiss the Fade this time, so we can't talk about it. My list, I wanted to mention, definitely Laura Mavula. She got me through this year. Emily Sande just came out with a great new album, Long Live the Angels. I just started listening to some Black British women. One is Ray Black, and another is Georgia Smith. They're both like late teens, early 20s. They sound way beyond their years. Really good artists. Have to give a nod to the Knowles sisters, as they definitely did it for the culture this year. And A Seat at the Table is an album that I will be bumping probably for at least the next 4 years, because it got me through. It definitely got me through the election, and the fallout after it, because I definitely needed to hear those words that were, you know, affirming Blackness, affirming that, you know, we have a right to be mad. We have a lot to be mad about. We're also weary, and we need to acknowledge that. And that we're also, you know, there's stuff that we've created as Black people, as Black women, that others can't touch. And, you know, it's for us and by us. There's just a lot of gems on that album. It's a really great piece of work. And, you know, there's other people, other artists trying to touch that album with their own work, and they're not really getting close. And I'm looking at you, Alicia Keys. I'm looking at you. She really... Poor. Anyway.
Basically.
I tried to listen, and I was like, no.
I'm going to leave it alone.
Anyway. She did it. It took this album 4 years or more to come about, but it's well worth the wait. She really did a great job. Her sister did a great job with the visual album and brought in a lot of influences from Black women directors. Had a great Black woman writer in Orson Shire to bring all of the songs together with different pieces of poetry. And, you know, featured a lot of Black women, musicians, athletes, actresses in the visual album, and mothers of slain Black people, that we lost to police violence. It's a it was a big deal culturally this year. So shout out to the Knowles sisters, and shout out to Samu, a rapper who's really nerdy, really into gaming, and really prolific. Just put out two albums this year. Shout out to her, and shout out to No Name. A lot of these artists we've featured as the intro and outro on the show. Probably most of them. Samo, King, No Name, Laura Mavula, Solange, Denisha, Sharon Jones, Santa Gold.
Yeah.
Jamila Woods. Yeah, so, you know, we try to represent. So that is music. In books, N.K. Jemisin put out The Fifth Season and The Obelisk Gate. Niecy Shaw released Everfair. Savannah J. Frierson gave us Go With Your Heart and Mana Tree. Rebecca Weatherspoon gave us the So Right, or the Sugar Daddy trilogy, with So Right, So Sweet, right. So Right, real. And So For Real.
Yeah.
So we are represented in sci-fi, fantasy, romance, erotica, and, you know, let us know if we
and
miss someone
else. I keep forgetting, but I haven't read it yet, but Grace Jones did her autobiography, and I have to read that. Mm-hmm. I think it's called I'll Never Release My Memoirs or something like that. I'll Never Write My Memoirs.
Right.
And I have to read that. And yeah, she, like you said, she was spilling some tea on that.
We need to just have an episode.
I have to get that book
on that. Like,
I know.
Who is she reading on this
I
page?
Know, right? Gaga.
So that's books. Let's move on before we get sued. In film, we had the announcement that Danai Gurira and Lupita Nyong'o would join Florence Kasumba and Ryan Coogler's Black Panther movie.
Yay!
So all of these beautiful black women in the same movie, in a Marvel movie.
Yes, superheroes.
Finally, it's like Luke Cage,
yeah,
but on screen.
Yes,
and set in Africa.
Yes.
Then we have Hidden Figures with Taraji P. Henson, Octavia Spencer, and Janelle Monáe in the lead roles. Viola Davis in Fences. Ruth Negga in Loving. Naomi Harris in the beautiful movie Moonlight. And a lot of these movies are getting Oscar
yes.
buzz, so... You know, I'm just.
Yeah.
I don't want to jinx
yeah.
it, but we might have a lot of black women in Oscar
yeah,
categories this year.
I mean, we're already pretty much trying to mold the Oscar into Viola's image now. So, yeah.
It needs to be
yeah.
the Viola. And the Viola
and
goes
Viola
to.
Davis.
Viola
Davis.
Viola's.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could just see Genesis in the background.
Right. So cute.
She probably already got a picture of her. I'm going to be mommy again. With Oscar.
I know, right? And she's going to have the actual, and she's going to have the actual Oscar.
Yes!
Well, it went with the dress.
Yes. She's the sweetest thing. Yeah. Okay. So yes, this is going to be good. And, you know, this will take us into, you know, 2017 and 2018, because we're not getting Black Panther
2018.
Because Marvel had to give us yet another Spider-Man.
How many times they gonna kill Uncle Ben?
Oh, fuck. God.
Jeez.
I don't know. I don't even care anymore. I don't care.
Oh, fuck. Uncle Ben dead again? Okay, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, well, whatever.
All right.
So, in theater, we have Danai Gurira again because she refuses to pick a sleigh. She has to slay everything. She wrote a play on Broadway called Eclipsed that starred Lupita Nyong'o and an all-African woman cast. Or an all-Black woman cast. Mostly Black, mostly African women, but with a Black director, it was just all Black woman everything. It was nominated for several Tony Awards, but seeing as they were up against Hamilton, I don't think they won much. Speaking of Hamilton, Renee Elise Goldsberry won a Tony for Hamilton. That made Inda very happy because she has been a fan from the beginning.
Oh my God.
So I don't know if you want to say a little piece about
Renee.
Renee
Goldsberry, I remember her from 20 years ago when she was on One Life to Live, and she was awesome then, and she just kind of, I just kind of lost track of her for a while because she must have been on a stage. This happens a lot with a lot of people, like, you don't know what happened to them, but turns out they're on Broadway or off-Broadway, and since we don't have access to that, we don't know where they are. But she must have been there, and so finally, when I saw that the Hamilton soundtrack came out, the cast recording, I listened to it, and I looked, and I'm like, oh, wait, that's Renee Elise Goldsberry, that's Evangeline from One Life to Live, and totally got me into it, and I was just so happy when the whole thing blew up because I'm like, she's finally about to be a household name after all this time. And she was awesome as Angelica Schuyler, and wow, she's just so amazing, just so great. And I'm so happy that she finally won that she finally won that Tony. And you know, I think she's also getting some more opportunities other places too. Just she thinks she's about to be in another film, and
yeah, she's going to be in that picture about Henrietta Lacks.
That's it. So more Black women, more Black women doing things. But yeah, so
and you know, we can't talk about theater without talking about the Queen of Broadway, Audrey McDonald, who made history by winning 6 Tonys. She was nominated for an Emmy Award for Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. I don't think she won.
I don't know.
She
should have.
She's won 6.
Yeah.
She's won 6 Tonys, which is more than any other woman and any other Black woman in history. And she had another baby girl recently. So
yes,
life is good for
Audrey McDonald. As it should be.
Yes. All hail the
and
queen.
Somebody please find me Lady Dace at Emerson's Bar and Grill, because I must see that. I only saw her perform that one song on Colbert Show, and my mind is blown. My mind is still blown, and that was months ago.
It's uncanny how she can sing like Audrey McDonald one minute and then go and just fully channel Billie Holiday another. Because their styles are so very different when it comes to singing. But so we need footage of that. We need somebody to sneak into Hamilton with a camera and give us some bootleg footage. Help some sisters out.
Ain't neither one of us getting to New York no time soon, and even if it was, the original cast is gone.
Yeah, and we can't afford, either way, we can't afford no Hamilton tickets. And we can't get in, because that thing is
booked to like 2080. Shit.
Anyway, moving on to athletes. We have to mention another queen, Serena Williams. We also have to mention her sister Venus, who has finally started playing after being injured a lot. We have to mention this is the year that Tamika Catchings played her last season in the WNBA. She has retired, but she will probably be popping up in the Basketball Hall of Fame pretty soon, I hope. You know, fingers crossed.
Yes.
Knock on wood. We have to mention all of the Black women Olympians. Gabby Douglas, Simone Biles, Michelle Carter in shot put.
Raven Saunders in shot put. Simone. Yeah, and I'm like, did we ever even look up the Simone's last name?
Simone Manuel.
Simone Manuel.
Simone
and
Manuel.
And did we ever look up water polo? Because I don't think we did. But there was a Black woman in water polo.
I didn't. But we can do it now. Water polo, Black woman. Yeah, Google loves my faces. Ashley Johnson. She is the first Black woman to play on the U.S. Olympic water polo team. Both of her parents are Jamaican. Just the entire U.S. women's track and field that won all of the medals.
Yeah.
Just
all 12 of them.
Just all over the podium. Yeah.
Black, and black.
So, yes. Yeah, forget gold, silver, and bronze. And black. It's black, and black.
Yeah. forgot her. Simonia Castor. Is that how you say her name, Simonia?
I don't know.
I'm so sorry if I mispronounced your name, hon. But yeah, she has to put up with all types of bullshit, and she's still winning.
Oh, that's the lady that's always constantly.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, people are urging her to get tests and stuff like that.
But she's still winning. She's still winning, so.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Stun on them, girl. Mm-hmm. Stun on them. Black women out there doing it. We everywhere. Inda, you want to take
that? And so, of course, I am a podcast person, and podcasts from Black women have just completely gotten me through so many days. And, of course, as always, I start off with Nerdgasm Noir Network. They recently changed their format. They are still here, though, and their last few shows were a three-part series on Luke Cage. So, you want to hear about some more Luke Cage? go listen to them. Probably already do, but go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Fresh Out of Tokens.
And then come back and listen to our old, to our previous episode with
yes.
Clark Keisha Kent, where we talk about the
yes.
Clark Kent.
Yes.
Luke Cage.
Definitely, because that was a good show, if I may say so myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you remember, we also had Tanya DePass on the show, and she's still co-hosting Fresh Out of Tokens, and they have a lot of good guests on that show. She even got to interview Samu, say you pronounce it, for their 100th episode. Cinemosity has two of my favorite girls on there, Sharon and Camille. Bad Fat Bros debuted this year as well. That has Ariel Woodson, and we also did an interview with her. And Bad Fat Bros mm-hmm. is a really good podcast. I love listening to them. The Black Girl Dangerous podcast also arrived this year. Mia McKenzie created it, but the permanent host now is Raquel Willis, and you should definitely listen to her. And you said that they do the, what's the name of their spirit medicine? Yes, spirit medicine.
Cause
you can catch that on their podcast feed as well. Shout out to Stacia L. Brown for Baltimore, The Rise of Charm City, which is a very good audio documentary about Baltimore. Love it. I also recently started listening to Black Chick Lit. It's Lit in Color, which I was actually on for an episode. So shout out to them and thanks for having me on. And you might also want to check out the Black Joy mixtape and the Lemonade Show. And was there another one? Nerds of Prey. Yeah, Nerds of Prey. And have to say goodbye to a couple of my favorites that ended this year. Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine, which I really adored. I'm so sad they're gone. And Blackwashed, because they were like college students and things. And so they had, you know, things to do with their life. So, but, you know.
Oh, I thought Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine were just going to change up.
I think so, but
what they did.
I know.
But they were still going to do it, but they might not do it as often.
Yeah, their last show was like in August. But I don't know if they really have any plans to come back, or at least not anytime soon. But they might be, but I don't know. I hope so, because I still enjoy them. Because they broke down being Mary Jane a lot and got me into the show, and I'm so glad now, because that's a really good show. It really is. I kind of dismissed it, you know, for a while, but when I got back into it, yeah, that's a very good show. And Gabrielle Union is great in it.
Okay. So I just wanted to mention a show that I started listening to. It's on Bumpers FM, which is an app where you can record podcasts from your phone and upload them. And the app is only on iPhone, but you can listen to them on your browser or wherever. There's a show by a woman named Zahira. She goes by Bad Dominicana on Twitter, and it's called Shouting from the Margins. And it's just about life as a Black woman, an Afro-Latina in America. And, you know, she talks about all kinds of things like navigating relationships, navigating TSA when they want to dig in your hair for possible weapons, and you know, just basically violate your person and your body for the excuse of safety. Different things about relationships, It's a really interesting show. It's a solo podcast, and the episodes range from 4 minutes to, 15 minutes long. So, they're not as long as, one of our shows is. So, you can definitely check out a lot of those out. And we hope you enjoy them. And we hope that some of you enjoy Black Girl Squee, and that we are helping you get through this year. And if not, we're going to talk our shit regardless. So, it's whatever. So that is our main topic. Again, if we left anyone out, please hit us up at Black Girl Squee. Black Girl Squee on Tumblr, Twitter, Gmail, iTunes. Just, hit us up and let us know. We'd like to hear from you. So now we're going to get to our Squee Queens. I wanted to nominate Viola Davis again because she was recently interviewed for Variety.com, and she always gives it straight, no chaser. Yeah. She says, even in fabulous roles, they are still within the confines of being strong, a device, funny. If it's a Black movie, at best, it's a biopic, because it makes the audience feel comfortable that I am investing in this Black person's humanity, who I already know has made a mark in the world. She also goes on to say that imagination is the one tool that is tossed out of the window when it comes to people of color, which is sad but true. But she's spilling all kinds of tea, and I love her for it, because she's gotten to a place where she no longer gives a fuck. She's like, I'm going to talk my shit, and you're going to listen. And yes. I love her for it. So, and who is your
My Squee Queen? I am nominating Viola Davis's co-star from The Help, Octavia Spencer. Has just found out that she will be playing God in an upcoming film. And I'm like, hey, awesome. Black woman is God. And also, she was also in this Variety series talking about diversity and typecasting. And she got to talk to Dev Patel. And, ooh, Lord, if she ain't looking good in these pictures next to him. And so, like, my entire Twitter timeline is like, give us this rom-com, please. And I'm like, I'm down for this. I am so down for this. And so Octavia is having a very good week. I'm hoping that she's going to have a very good rest of the next of the year and a very good award season, because she's in Hidden Figures. And glad to see that so far it doesn't look like that Oscar curse has got her, because she's been working pretty consistently. And I'm so glad to see that she is. And so, yeah, Octavia Spencer is, yeah. She's my Squee Queen for this week.
Yay! So we're going to move from Squee to print.
Yeah.
That's how we do it here. And we finally bit the bullet.
Yes.
And broke down. We're giving it to to John Boyega.
John Boyega.
John Boyega, as some people call him. Because Enda pointed out to me that Kofi Cirabo is younger than John Boyega, which is I still can't believe, but it's true. Unless somebody's lying about their age. Yeah, John Boyega
He just keeps setting the thirst traps. Intentionally.
Yeah, I mean, he's on Instagram posting pictures of him in bed as he first wakes up.
Like, John.
He's not wearing a shirt. He's just in bed, and you gotta, I'm saying, if you're gonna post a thirst trap, people gonna wonder if you're wearing anything at all.
Just saying, you know?
That happens.
And he's also posting the stills and shots from Pacific Rim, too.
He's looking all.
He's growing a beard. And he's really looking like that composite of Denzel Washington and Idris Elba. I can't get over just how much he looks like the both of them.
It's like he was created in a lab to explode ovaries. It's not
it is
fair.
Not.
It's, and he's getting all swole. And he was already thick.
Yeah. And he's working with the dude that cut Michael B. Jordan for Creed. We not... The glow up ain't even done.
He's only 24.
Glow up ain't even done. We are not going to survive.
No. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I don't know. I mean, thick men was already my weakness. But if he gonna get thick and swole, he might be the DWIDP every damn week.
Yeah, we just, you know, have to throw this out again because it's John Boyega. I mean, how are you ever gonna get sick of looking at him? Come on.
Girl, we knew he was going to be a problem.
Yeah.
We knew he was going to be a problem, and he has become a serious fucking problem.
John, you keep doing this. You just keep doing it.
And then he'll get on Snapchat and post, you know, pictures dancing, you know, with his family.
Pictures with his nephew.
You know, playing with his little nephew.
And that little boy looks so much like him. Oh.
That little baby is so tiny.
He's just adorable.
See, I mean, this is all... It's all crafted and meant to just blow up our reproductive organs. I don't understand it.
He's torturing us.
Anyway. Then, and we can't forget the videos with his cat. It's like... Babies, cats, families, grandmas.
Oh my God, church with his mama.
It's like, it's adorable overload. I can't take
I
it.
Know. And then, he just got the nerve to be fun doing this shit. Just got some nerve.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. If he wasn't so damn wonderful, I'd be mad at him. I'd want to fight. He might have to catch these hands, but they might be in different places than he's been. Anyway, what are the vocab?
Okay. So with that, we move on. So womanist vocab. All right. And our term today is heterosexism. Heterosexism includes a system of bias that assumes heterosexuality as the default identity and perpetuates homophobia. This assumption of heterosexual identity means that heterosexism is in the fabric of societal institutions, laws, and policies, so the needs and concerns of non-heterosexual people are not met. For instance, allowing hospital visits to a spouse of the quote-unquote opposite gender is heterosexism and does not allow for concessions to same-sex or other gender spouses and partners, especially where same-sex unions are not recognized by law. Well, actually, I forgot to add that addendum that, same-sex marriage is recognized by law now, but there are still institutionalized discrimination against non-heterosexual folks, that includes employment. So, yeah, heterosexism is still very much a problem.
And the new administration might try to repeal some of these laws. They can't repeal the Supreme Court judgment, but it might repeal other protections for transgender people and other just anyway. So, thank you for the Miss Vocap. Our Black Girl Commandment is be kind to yourself. And get as much comfort food, as much of all types, pop culture, actual food, anything that you enjoy, and make it part of your self-care routine, and because we're going to need it this next 4 years. And with that, just want to remind you again, you can contact us at Black Girl Squee, at Indus Corner, at Dust Daughter, blackgirlsquee.tumblr.com, blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. You can hit us up on iTunes and rate and review. And listen to the show on blackgirlsquee.simplecast.fm. So until next time,
bye.
Bye.